Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Hi, this is Bill, and welcome to this week's episode of Real World Fitness. Got a great show for you, and before we get to this week's featured interview, I want to thank everybody who downloaded last week's show. You took part in a very significant event for me by downloading the most listened to episode that I've done thus far. Very, very pleased with the numbers on it. And for those of you that missed it, my featured guest was one of the most physically fit professional athletes of all time, a gentleman named Bob Backlund. He's a retired professional wrestler. In fact, he would be considered a legend. In wrestling, he was a great amateur wrestler as well as a former World Wrestling Federation champion. And this interview seemed to go viral. It's all over a bunch of the wrestling message boards and mentioned on a few websites and all over Facebook. So I'm very, very pleased with that. And I'm also very pleased with the fact that I obviously picked up some new listeners and I hope they continue to tune in. Now, based on the very positive response of that interview, I am going to make an effort to bring in some other interviews with some of the other great professional wrestlers that I've had the opportunity to meet over the years and have contact with. We're going to keep it to people who were very physically fit, very strong, very athletic, to tie in with the fact that this is a fitness show. But we're going to try and bring in some of those professional wrestlers and some other professional athletes in the near future. Saw something online recently that just was amazing to me, and I'm trying to get in touch with this young lady. And if anyone out there knows how to reach a young lady named Charlotte Brown in Texas, I really would appreciate you getting in touch with me. For those of you that have no clue what I'm talking about, this young lady is a high school student in Texas, I believe in Austin, Texas, and she is a totally blind pole vaulter. That one just blew my mind. I've heard of, and well, we interviewed Lilo a few weeks ago, who was a world-class discus and shot putter, but now we're talking about a young lady who is a pole vaulter, and that's just amazing. And I would like to have her on as a guest. But unfortunately, I can't seem to find a way of contacting her. So anyone out there who knows this young lady or knows how to reach her, please get directly in touch with me. Next week's show features two exceptionally intelligent, articulate, and knowledgeable gentlemen who I've interviewed in the past. First, it'll be Brooks Kubik, who I've interviewed several times. Most recently, a few weeks ago, we shared an episode featuring him talking about nutrition. And the other gentleman is Clarence Bass, who was my first interview several months ago on my website. Clarence is an amazing man at 77 years old. He's in phenomenal physical condition, still is, still works out a couple times a week, and he's just amazing. We're going to talk with them about their training, about nutrition, about what's going on with both of them. And they're both attorneys. So you know it's a lengthy interview because they both like to talk, and I'm guilty of that as well. So we're going to probably split it into two parts. So that'll be the next two episodes of Real World Fitness featuring Brooks Kubik and Clarence Bass. Now on to today's interview. My interview today is with legendary strength coach Dan John, a name you guys have heard me mention many times, one of my personal mentors slash heroes, and somebody I've had the pleasure of interviewing in the past. Today we're going to talk with Dan about the art of coaching, a new workshop that he is doing. He's doing one in London in July, one in DC in November. I think there's going to be one in San Diego, one in Australia. And I'm taking the one in DC, and I'm very, very excited about it. It's a three-day workshop, and I'm real excited about going and spending 3 days studying with Dan. He's the best at what he does. So we're going to talk about the workshop, and we're going to talk about his new book, Can You Go? This is a book about assessing people and determining what they really need in their fitness and nutrition programs. It's a great book for personal trainers, for coaches, for athletic trainers and coaches, as well as for you. Any of you out there who want to get in better condition, this is a great book because he breaks it down to help you figure out what you really need in your training, not what you want. I mean, we all go into the gym going, okay, I know what I want to do. I used to have a training partner that always wanted to train arms, always wanted to bench press. I'd say, let's do some abs. Oh, I'm tired. We'll do them next time. Let's do some legs. Oh, I hate to do legs. Made the point one day of saying, hey, you know, I've never seen you in shorts. He said, well, I got skinny legs. So, well, let's do some squats. Oh, I don't want to squat. I don't like those. So he was a classic example of somebody who did what they wanted to do, not what they needed to do. And that's most of us. That's most of us. I hate doing mobility work. My balance isn't great. My joints hurt. My muscles are tight. I hate doing mobility work, but I know I need to do it. So this book breaks it all down as to what you need to do, helping you determine what you need to do. There's some simple assessments in it. Doesn't take any kind of education or any kind of special tools. It just takes being honest and assessing yourself and going, okay, this is where I apparently am. So this is what I need to work on, whether it be getting stronger, getting more flexible, or reducing your body fat. Now, this interview was plagued with technical difficulties, and I'm going to apologize to everybody for that. First, I want to thank Dan for having incredible patience. We were supposed to start at 3, and we had some mechanical / audio issues, and we weren't able to get started until 3:30. And then, when the interview was complete, Patrick, my amazing audio guy, emailed me and said, we got a problem. The first 5 minutes of Dan's audio are not there. Said all the meters showed it there. He could hear him in his recording. I could hear him on my end. But for some reason, it just wasn't there on the final recording. So this interview starts up maybe 4 minutes, 5 minutes in. So just to bring you up to speed, because it starts in mid-sentence with Dan, part of the book is a table of categories of what people where people can assign themselves based on their needs. Categories are things like, well, it's based on three main things: mobility, body composition / fat loss, and strength. So he categorizes people into 7 categories based on their needs, combining these three areas. So right at the beginning, you hear Dan say, hi, I'm Dan. I'm a 3. And what a 3 is on his table is a body composition client, somebody who needs to focus on reducing their body fat a little bit. So that brings us up to where Dan starts talking. And I think I've wasted enough of everybody's time by jabbering on. So let's get right to this great interview with the coach of coaches, my mentor, Dan John.
And we have a very simple test to figure out who you are. And I always joke, hi, I'm Dan, and I'm a 3. Until I come to grips with a few things, I'm going to continue being a 3. And the nice thing is if you tell me, Dan, I'm a 3, I know exactly what you need. You need some kind of caloric restriction, and you need some kind of inefficient exercise. And it's that simple. We now know how to train you tomorrow. You need to either do concept 2 rowing mixed with something else, or kettlebell swings mixed with push-ups, or heavy hands walk around a park. But that's what you need to be doing.
Okay. So a 3 on your list of categories is obviously a fat loss client.
A body composition client, because the second you put weight loss or fat loss, that adds about 12 more paragraphs to a book.
Ah, and, okay.
We're trying to keep this. We're trying to keep this as an F-15, not as a 707. We wanted it sleek and fast.
So, nice and streamlined. Can I just ask you to jump back, because you mentioned another book that I'm not familiar with. You said Tiny Habits.
Oh, Tiny Habits isn't a book. It's a website by a Stanford professor by the name of B.J. Fogg, F-O-G-G. And his belief is that we humans need to improve our habits. We But the problem is we jump in. I mean, you're going to quit drinking, quit smoking, exercise every day, and eat, you know, three vegetable-laden meals a day. Well, you're not going to do it. You're not. His idea is, and it's very funny in his workshop, he has everybody in the audience floss one tooth. And he says, what are the chances you can floss a single tooth for the next 28 straight days? And everybody laughs, ha, 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 of course I can do that. And his argument is, okay, that's all I'm going to ask you to do is I want you to floss one tooth. And when you finish flossing that tooth, I want you to clap your hands together and say, all right, with all the enthusiasm and energy you can generate. His idea that to build up habits, you must be 100% sure you can do this habit. And 100%. I mean, and it's better to go less and less and less. I'd like you to start drinking more water every day. I want you to start, can you drink a sip of water after every pot of coffee? Yeah, I can do that. Good. That's where we're starting for the next 28 days. After you drink a pot of coffee or two bottles of wine, you'll drink a sip of water. And you'll laugh. You say, that's too easy. Right. I know it's too easy. But then I want you to clap your hands and say, all right. Well, the idea is these tiny habits build momentum. And once you get that, well, like my friend who lost 100 pounds in a year, two glasses of water a day. That was his tiny habit the first month. A year from then, he was 100 pounds lighter and he ran a half marathon.
A lot of what you're talking about here, I seem to remember reading in Josh's book. Well, both of your book. Fat Loss Happens on Monday.
Well, Josh came about this from the exact opposite way, but it's all the same. Josh's killer habit is the food journal. And so he lives by getting you to buy into the food journal. BJ Fogg says, you're going to do it by mastering tiny habits over 12 months. Josh is going to say, well, we're going to get there by you mastering this little daily booklet of what did I eat today. I think both roads get you there. I think all roads get you there. But the nice thing about Josh is so focused on that food journal that once you buy into the food journal 3 weeks later, who wrote the book, Everything You Want to Know About Sex? Ruben. You know, Ruben got a start as a fat loss diet doctor before he wrote that book. And his
didn't know that.
His secret was that his clients had to write down before you get any pills or any lotions or anything, everything you ate in 2 weeks. And he used to joke, 2 weeks they'd show back up my office 20 pounds lighter and they thought I was a genius. Because if you write down everything you eat, honestly, for 2 weeks, just monitoring it will just give you the insights you need to have. Josh is a little bit more proactive than that, you know, with his little thing about, you know, you can either put a green mark on protein and, you circle a cheat meal or however you decide to do it. But the idea that I can look at my journal and get positive feedback for protein at meals, and we just can see that it, last week you had, you know, you had 17 cheat meals. Well, you might not be able to afford 17. Can we sneak you down to 15 this week? And once you say, ha, I only had 13 cheat meals, according to Josh, now you're on the road because you've bought in. You are now at least counting the number of cheat meals you have in a week. And that's going to be much better. That is a big part of this book, is that simple mental set. And the mental set for this book, Bill, is the idea that what I want you to do is I want to tell you what you need to do. And if we can focus on just these simple things for a week or two, once I got you for 2 weeks, I've got my hooks on you. Then we can move forward. And then our goals can get a lot sexier than they are. But some of the goals we have are like sleeping with less pillows. People laugh at it unless they sleep with 6, 7, or 8 pillows.
Mm-hmm.
Those people are like, yeah, you're right. And their spouses more so. Many of the questions from this book comes from my working with the American military. And what I began to understand, and I haven't shared this with many people, so this is when I work with the husband and wife, I can't, like the husband might have been through an FMS test. So if I say, if you're 17 and under and you have 3 asymmetries, you need to do X, Y, and Z, or 50 or whatever. That's great and all for the guys who understand it. But when I ask the questions, how many pillows do you need to sleep at night? The wife understands that question too. You follow the spouse.
You're translating it to the layman there?
What you're translating it to, what you're trying to do is get everybody working together on the same thing. Like the one test week, can you stand on one foot for 10 seconds? It's such a low hanging fruit, but if you can't, well, why not? You know, you told me there's nothing wrong with you. You're absolutely fine physically, but you can't stand on one foot for 10 seconds. Oh, that might be because I have malaria. I'm missing, 5 feet of my small intestine, and I have, seven metal discs in my spine. Well, wait, I thought you told me you had no injuries. Oh, yeah, I have no injuries. We joke about it, but every coach and trainer I know argues the same, that we laugh about it because what I just said is absolutely true. And it's true in my case. Brett Jones one time asked me, but for the cert, he goes, does anyone have any injuries? And I just kind of stood there, no. And he walks over and he touches two of the surgery lines that he can see in my body at the time. He goes, well, what about these surgeries? I go, oh yeah, those were surgeries. I'm fine now. And we all think that way. We all forget that we had two wrist surgeries, an elbow surgery, a shoulder surgery, blah, blah, blah. Until you can't stand on one for 10 seconds. Yeah.
Let me interrupt you on that one, because that's an interesting point. And every time I've heard you mention that point, and I read it in the book, and you mentioned it in our last interview, I'm thinking, how does this work? Because blind people tend to have balance issues, just like people with hearing losses.
Okay.
And I can't stand on one foot for 10 seconds, and I've been cursing you for weeks trying to do it. I have a very good friend that's a world-class powerlifter, still holds a few records. He's a master's powerlifter. He's totally blind. And I could put a gun next to his head, and he couldn't stand on one foot for 10 seconds.
But remember, this is a clearance test. But here's the thing. Say I'm working with you just online or just through Skype, and you forget to mention that you're blind. Don't you think that being blind changes the workouts that we're going to have you do?
Probably somewhat, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but if you forget to see, this is the point I'm trying to make, Bill. People forget to mention that kind of thing.
Well, they don't think it would have a relevance to it.
Well, why would it? This is weightlifting. What does weightlifting have to do with the senses of the body? Well, it has everything to do with it. So, yeah, so when you, but I want to know why you can't. Now, you explained it to me right now. So I would work with you still, because you've explained to me why you can't stand on one foot. At least now I know, okay? And it's it's kind of laughable when you get to this point, isn't it? It really is, I think. When I tell people this, people who've never been around athletes or trainees, they think I'm kidding. It's like, no, people don't tell you anything of importance. Now, they'll tell you about their kids. They'll tell you about their day, but they won't tell you that they've had some kind of gastronomical surgery that took 32 feet of their stomach out. You know, they just, forgot to mention that. Oh, so you want to go on a high protein diet? And, oh, okay. Yeah, good plan. Good plan. So that is, I don't mean to sound frustrated, but you can, it is an issue. It's a big issue.
Sure. People don't think certain things. Oh, you know, you're talking about the surgeries. Like you said, well, I'm fine now. That was 20 years ago. That was 10 years ago. But it's, you know, I had a hernia surgery 3 years ago and I feel great, but I'm aware of it when I do certain lifts. I'm aware of it when I do certain things. It's like, okay, you maybe want to wear a belt when you squat because the hernia talks to you when you go over a certain weight. But that was 3 years ago.
I'm walking with you on that. I had a hernia surgery in December. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, one point you mentioned in the book that I thought was hilarious because it's so true. While I was cursing you over this 1 foot thing, I was constantly trying to do it.
Yes. Well, and that, see, that's what I want all my tests. I want all the tests that I have. I want you to become suddenly self-aware. So the 1, 2, 3, 4 assessment really is become self-aware. Okay, you weigh over 300 pounds. I want you to know that that's an issue. You'll be surprised how often you buy new belts when you're a body composition client, because you're always trying to play around with that. You'll be so happy when you get a new pair of pants. The pillow thing, you'll start to really say, now, do I really need, last night, interesting, last night I became a two-pillow guy again. I became a mobility client today because yesterday we did 500 swings and a bunch of other stuff.
Oy.
And when I went to bed last night, I became a mobility client again. So this morning, we had a we had a major mobility section to our workout because I became mobility. It'll be fat, you know. So, but here's the point I'm trying to make is I am hyper aware of how many pillows I sleep with. I am hyper aware of how many vegetables I eat a day, or if I break that half an hour workout threshold. And I test my standing long jump at my farmer bar just as a joke. I just test myself all the time just to see where I'm at. So that's what I'm trying. Boy, I hate to go back into our great vault of Western civilization, but you know, what I'm trying to get you to do is look at your own life. You know, I want you to spend a little bit of time examining your own life. And what the 1-2-3-4 assessment, there are no real tools besides a tape measure, but the idea is that while you're drying dishes, you stand on one foot. While you're brushing your teeth, you stand. When you go to bed at a hotel, you're conscious about how many pillows you're sleeping with. And that's where I'm trying to head with this test and with this assessment.
So you're basically trying to get people just to become far more self-aware.
If you don't mind me making a global statement that might not be supported by enough facts, I think if there is a problem with obesity in America today, I think self-awareness is where we should begin, not yelling people at boot camps. We don't give people the toolkit to make themselves more aware about what they're doing. And that's the funny thing about the stupid, how many pillows does it take to sleep comfortably at night? For the first time in years, you became aware of sleep, of your body that during those 6, 7, 8 hours of sleep. And if I could hear that number 8, 9, 10 hours of sleep a night, one thing I know, you're not obese if you're sleeping 10 hours a night.
Mm-hmm. On the self-awareness thing, I have to bring up a point because I wrote a blog post about this a long time ago, and I have some acquaintances that I have such a hard time understanding. I know one woman in particular that works with my wife. She's absolutely beautiful. She is obsessive about her makeup, her hair, her clothes. But she's a good 100 to 150 pounds overweight, and she doesn't seem to be aware of it.
Yeah.
I mean, why would you spend a fortune on makeup and your hair and just everything? And I mean, meticulous about every other aspect, but she's morbidly obese, and it boggles my mind.
Well, and that's,
I don't get it.
And that's where we start with that stand on one foot test, because that simple little thing exposes many people to issues. Shockingly so. Now, a lot of if I was talking to like a group right now, Perform Better, or some of these other fitness things I do, or the military, no one would be able to hear what I just said. But if you work with the vast bulk of humanity, and it was kind of a pun in there too, if you work with the vast bulk of humanity, you will find many obese patients, clients, who can't stand on one foot for 10 seconds because of the obesity thing. They need to be made self-aware that you can't do this simple thing. Here in the state of Utah, the highway patrolman, their test for drunk driving is for you to stand on one foot for 30 seconds. Now, no offense, I don't think in the peak of my athletic career I could stand on one foot for 30 seconds, but they expect to be able to do that with blaring red, the big the red lights flashing around and a gun to your head. But the point I guess I'm trying to make is, if you can't stand on one foot for 10 seconds, we might have an issue that we need to look at. If you need seven pillows to sleep comfortably and you weigh 280 pounds, that might tell you something. Might just tell you something. Now, so I think you and I are in agreement on this, the self-awareness.
Yeah, it's definitely an issue. And sometimes I just sit here and think, who's the blind one? Can't you see yourself, people? Well, the number four, okay, one is the stand on your one foot for 10 seconds. Two is if you weigh under 300. Three is your waist measurement being...
Nope. So one, stand on one foot. Two measurements, the 300 and the waist height. Three...
Sorry about that.
Three questions. And four is the four tests, although most people just need the plank. So generally, but if the person fails the plank test, you're done. You don't need to keep going.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll give you enough information to score them as a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, or 7. If they don't fit there, they're still not in there, Then you go on to the standing long jump, the farmer walk, and the get back up test. And by the if you do all four tests, it's not only a good test, it's a good workout. But you can really get a sense of things as a coach to say where we need to move from here. Yeah.
The get back up looks like a great mobility workout in and of itself.
Well, it's a rolling workout. It's a lunge workout. It's a tumbling workout. But what I like about it is I don't give you any clues about how I want you to do it. Folks who don't know the book, it's just a series of commands by me telling you to get back up. And the idea is to try to wake up your inner athlete. I don't judge anything until about the 15th to 20th get back up. And then I start looking to see, is your ankle and knee in a good relationship? Are you rolling up? Or, you know, how much hitching are you doing? How much head throwing are you doing? And it's nice because I can watch you do the test. And very often, I can program you for the next couple of days what you need just by how you, I hate to say how you move poorly or well, because it's, but here are some things you might need to work on. And boy, it's almost universally correct just doing that little drill. When you're in a situation that's unknown, how you respond usually shows your strengths and weaknesses pretty well.
Would I be correct in assuming that dealing with that get back up drill is part of the Art of Coaching workshop?
It is. It is. What we do with the Art of Coaching workshop is we take this assessment. This assessment's day two. But what we try to do is, it comes down to this. Let me just save you all the money and time of going. It's all about cost to benefit ratios. The Art of Coaching is being able to say, what am I getting from this? And you constantly have to play with that as a coach. It's funny because I think that the Nash equilibrium is a better model for coaching than the cost to benefit ratio. But I'm not ready yet to share that with everybody where, you know, well, trust me, it's formulated in my mind. I just never explained it yet. But the idea is that there are probably 15 new items came out on the fitness market as we have had this interview. New toys to play with, new equipment, new books, new DVDs, new everything. And you're constantly having, as a coach, someone shows up at your gym and says, you don't have a Hydroculator 5000 in your gym, you know, some new piece of equipment. You have to be able to say, well, yeah, mm-hmm. It costs $5,000. I can't afford it. Or really, tell me more about it. And, you know, oddly, I pick up pieces of equipment sometimes and they just become t-shirt holders, and other pieces of equipment like TRXs and kettlebells get used not only every day, but literally almost every minute of the training session. So it's just funny how, so the whole book is the workshop. There's a section in the workshop about American football and how games turn on basically five things in American football, especially at the high school and college level. Games turn on about five things. Handling onside kicks, handling the sudden change game, that's when the interception or fumble. If we get the interception or fumble, scoring. If we lose the interception or fumble, not letting you score. Two-point conversions. Two-point conversion, man. The onside kick thing. One of the games last year in the bowl games had not kicked an onside kick all year, and their season came down to this play, which was an onside kick, and they hadn't done it one time in a game. And my thought process was, so you're rolling on the dice on something you never practiced. So to me, the Art of Coaching is, what are the big hitters? What are the big things? The cliche a couple of years ago, what are the big rocks, you know? And I think good coaching is when you realize that these are the big rocks. And it might be something as crazy as practicing onside kicks every day, first thing in practice. It might be something as simple as, I think kettlebell swings are important, so we do 250 kettlebell swings every day, every workout. So that to me is the Art of Coaching. I'm circling these things and saying, folks, this is key. This is crucial. This is important. This is the yellow brick road to your goal. Okay. And then having, of course, the courage to stick with that. And that courage is the act of the courage to sticking to that. That's the true art of coaching, the courage to stick with your guns.
And I think the sticking with it for the client That's the hardest part. It doesn't matter what the program you put them on. Every new program we're excited about. It's sticking with it. And what is your phrase? Finishing it? Just completing it?
Finish the program. You know, I think I summarized the book with that line. You know, decide on what you can work on, and then for God's sakes, finish that. Then find something new and cuter and prettier and shinier. But finish the program. If there's been a secret to my success as a coach and athlete is, I mean, I did the 28-day velocity diet. I did the Soviet six-week squat thing. I did my Mass Made Simple. I completed them all. Now, some of them are stupid. Some of the stuff I did is yuck, has no value whatsoever. In fact, I regress doing it. But here's the thing. Once I finished it, now I can critique it and make it better. Most people don't finish it. That's why, you know, I did BJ Fogg's Tiny Habits workshop, and I really enjoyed it. And I finished it. I did John Berardi's Precision Nutrition Program. I really enjoyed that. Sadly, in the middle of it, I had to have a total hip replacement. That kind of changed everything for me. But, you know, that's a 9-10 month program. Finish it. And what you can do from that is then you build on that. Every success you have, you build upon it. And that's something I've kind of, if there's any lesson I can teach you is, I don't care what you're doing, just finish it and then come up with a better idea.
That's the hard one, because as soon as most people turn on the TV, pick up a magazine, talk to a friend, new diet, better diet, new workout program, big arms in 20 minutes, smaller waist in 15 minutes.
Constant and never ending, is it? Just constant. Yeah.
It's very hard to stick to, well, it's only 6 weeks. But this is such an instant world, it's so hard for people to stick to that. You know, since you mentioned John Berardi and we were talking about Josh before, I have to compliment you. And this is something I really love about your reading and about talking to you. You don't talk nutrition a lot. You know, you're not a nutritionist. You're a coach. You stick to what you are great at. And when it comes to the subject of nutrition, you're quick to mention the names of the people that excel in that area.
Oh, yeah. In fact, Breaking Muscle had an article from one of my guys, Mark Halpern. Now, in the book, Mark is the one who gives us that arrow approach to nutrition. We're on the arrow mm-hmm. going to the right. On the far left is candy and soda. And somewhere in the middle, three quarters, is vegetables, protein, and seafood. And the tip of the arrow is perfection. Well, he wrote a really nice follow-up to that in Breaking Muscle. A great summary of that part of the book and extension of it. So for me, I've got, in fact, Matt was here yesterday. I've got two full-time nutritionists who train at my gym. I mean, I'm a phone call away from talking to John Berardi. I mean, I am literally a phone call away from talking to a guy like Josh Hillis. So why even think that I can have a better answer when I can just steal from the best? And the problem is when you talk to the best and brightest, Lyle McDonald too, another good friend, another bright, bright guy. When you talk to Lyle, Josh, John, Matt, Mark, the apostles of nutrition. That's funny because it's true.
It is.
and Lyle and the forgotten 14th apostle. when you talk to those guys, it's nothing fancy. It's nothing complex. You know, Lyle certainly goes down the road into more of the psychological tweaks and things like that. Josh likes to keep things simple, but he likes the psychological. John likes the psychological, the simple. Mark certainly likes to keep things simple. And Matt, you know, Matt's got some great insights. But all of them keep food as just, I mean, hate to say this, sounds crazy, but food is food to these guys. You know, the best nutritional minds I work with, food is food. It can be magical if, you know, you're smart enough, you can do some amazing things. But for most of the time, it's nuts and bolts. It's not anything you didn't learn. Well, it depends now. But nothing my mom said in 1959 is different than what you'd hear now. And so that makes me happy. And so what we look for with my group is we look for where everybody agrees in nutrition. And that's where we start our basis. And everybody agrees that you should eat more vegetables. Everybody agrees that you shouldn't eat what I call Frankenstein fats, so those fats invented in a lab. You should probably stay away from cardboard carbohydrates. Carbs that come in a box or a bag. You know, if you just follow those three pieces of advice, you know, you're going to be okay. You know, I mean, and the funny thing is the 14-year-old who's listening to this, it wants to run over to the nutrition store and buy, you know, a bottle of something for $79.95. Where really over time, you know, having vegetables with breakfast is probably a better move for him.
You know, I had an epiphany when I was rereading one of the chapters yesterday on the cardboard carbs, as you call them. You're talking about chewing, and you said, you know, all this stuff, these cardboard carbs, things that come in a box, come in a bag, they melt in your mouth. They turn to mush.
Right.
I went, he's right. They do. They turn to mush. They require no mastication, no chewing, no even the slightest caloric burn to break them down.
And moreover, you can have your teeth can be in terrible condition, which is one of the reasons I send people to dentists. I think if you're a gym owner, you need the name of a local eye doctor, dentist, medical doctor, and veterinarian. Trust me on that one. And chiropractor in our gym, and chiropractor. We have two. Here's a phone number. Go call him. It's amazing how many people who struggle with fat loss issues have terrible dental hygiene. And maybe need crowns, or maybe need, they have cavities. So they can't really chew raw red pepper because they literally can't. They physically can't mm-hmm. do it. And I think that's the lost gem of the empire of nutrition is dental care.
It all seems to come back to a full, I guess holistic is the right word because that is whole. It's a full view. It's that Frankenstein thing in the book, not the Frankenstein fats, but there's another reference to Frankenstein where you talk about not worrying about the pieces, worry about the whole.
Right. And that's where I spend my whole life. It's, one of my favorite authors is Steve Ilg, I-L-G, and his concept of whole body training, where you got to make sure you get your meditation in as well as your super duper cardio workout and your lifting. And he also recommends to his clients to do things like take your bike to work once or twice a week to ease up on the environment and have plants and flowers around you to calm you. I truly believe in holism, absolutely, and always have.
It kind of goes back to an article you wrote a long time ago, very simple article called Things That Are Good For You, where you say, put your seatbelt on, brush your teeth, floss your teeth.
Yeah. And, what's funny is that's all pretty good advice. You know, it's oddly, I tell people if you have a child in single digits, you know, 1 through 9, one of the greatest gifts you can give them for their life is daily dental care. Teaching them the habit of flossing and brushing your teeth every day. Because that set of teeth you have at about 7, 8, or 9, that's it. You don't get any more. So when you're 95 with healthy teeth, yeah, maybe mom and dad have been dead decades, but you can still nod your hat to them and say, thanks so much. That's, to me, real health. I mean, I certainly like beating people in competition. I certainly like winning, and I like to throw things far. But really, the real victories come from being around long enough to enjoy grandkids and healthy enough to run with them, you know?
Being pain-free and aware and functional at whatever age you end up to being.
Yeah, there's on this thing on Facebook today, they were showing these before and after pictures of bodybuilders and all these, you know, you can almost tell the guy his age is, well, you can't say steroids are bad for you. This is unfair. You're cherry picking pictures. And it's like, really? You are? Because I know this. I mean, a lot of guys made a lot of my friends made a lot of bad choices. Not just talking about steroids, but a lot of other stuff. My 40-year high school reunions this year. And on my block, Ramona Avenue, one guy, that was around the corner, but two guys killed themselves. If you go down Wilms, one guy, Daryl, got killed by the South City cops. They shot him in the chest. And another buddy, Will, killed himself. So in a group of four people my age on my two blocks intersected, four are dead.
They made some very bad choices.
And I think about my guys I competed against, and many of them are dead. Many of them are cripples. They got terrible joint issues, and we make choices this way. Bill, always understand, with me, there's no judgment. The whole walk a mile in the moccasins thing, and there, but the grace of God and all that other stuff. But, when you get to a certain age, you start to realize that you don't compromise long-term health for some short-term thing. You might think it's funny to say, I've never flossed, or I don't need a dryer, I don't need a seat belt. I don't need to hold my beer, watch this. I don't need a helmet. That's all funny and good, and you might get away with it until you don't. And then you'll wish you took care of business. And to me, that's holism.
That makes perfect sense. Okay. One thing, going back to the book, and I made this, I threw a question at some of the people that I work with in my online class. I said, all right, I always set all these goals. And I said, what goals do you guys have? And I got, I just like to exercise. Do you have a goal? Not really. We'll make so much more progress if we have goals. And one of the things that the non-goal goal in your book, the A, not A, I thought was a great non-goal goal, if that makes sense.
Well, let's make sure that the audience understands this. This comes from my friend Steve-O, and his point, and I agree with him 100%, now I know more of it, is most clients will tell you what they think you want to hear. So we call them A, not A clients, where they're basically looking and telling you, you see this person here? That's not me. And so that's why the 1-2-3-4 assessment is so important, because if I have somebody who needs mobility work and body composition work, we can put together a program that rewards both sides of that issue, that works both sides of that coin there. So A, not A, is the most common client most people get. They want something, they just don't know what it is. And that, isn't that odd to say that? But the truth is, when you talk to somebody going away to college, you'll say, why are you going away to college? And they'll tell you what they were heard from their mom, dad, or teachers. But they clearly generally don't have any idea why they're about to spend $55,000 a year to go to college. They have no idea at all.
What I took from the A, not A, is I don't really know what I want to achieve, but I know I don't want what I have right now.
That's exactly it. That is it, exactly. I don't know what I want, but I don't want this. And I tell you, I certainly am no counselor. God, I would talk about the world's worst counselor. That would be me, because that would be the whole thing. Stop whining. Parents would come in. Your child is not Gandhi, Lincoln, and Einstein. Next! Your child is not Jesus of Nazareth. Next! But one of the hardest things when you work with most people is that they know there's a need for change, but God bless them, they don't know what they don't know, literally. And so that's where the 1-2-3-4 assessment comes from. It's this attempt to tell you, okay, Bill, you need this. Maybe you only need it for a week or two. We'll assess again in 2 weeks. But for now, here's the areas we want you to work on. Here's the training program to do. Now, you're going to work alongside Dan. Dan's a 3, okay? Hi, Dan. Hi, I'm a 3. Dan has a big waistline, which he's quickly melting down. So you'll do some of the stuff he does, but sometimes you're going to do this instead of what he's doing. You got that? You need mobility between rest sets. He needs concept 2 rowing between sets, okay? And it can be that simple. Mm-hmm. It can be that easy. So what's nice is you can still train in community, but with just small differences. Yeah. So it's all about, and I hate to summarize, but Flannery O'Connor once said, if you can paraphrase a story, it's not a very good story. But if you don't mind, I'll paraphrase my book, because it's not a very good book. I don't care what the client wants to do, it's what they need to do. So we're going to focus on the need. And when we focus on the need, very often people within a few days go, hey, you know what? My friend Brian Deedy, he started focusing on what he needed to do. Within about 2 months, he goes, I just can't believe the difference. He can't believe the difference in his energy level. He's a three like me. His energy levels. Now, what he wanted to do was get his press up to big lifts. He wanted to get his farmer walk 73 miles. He wanted to, you know, jump over a building and, you know, run faster than a locomotive.
In a single bound.
Yes. And the truth is he needed to do concept two rowers and swings and eat vegetables every meal. That's what he needed. And once you focus on what you need, all of a sudden, very quickly, your body goes, yes, that's right. That's it exactly. Not all this other silly stuff you've been doing. That's it right there. And it's absolutely true in my case. Oh, absolutely true.
Well, just to summarize the whole thing, I think what the whole message in the book is, you need a coach because you need someone to tell you what you need, not what you want. Okay, you want big guns? Okay, that's great. You want those big arms? What about that 38-inch belly? But I want big arms. Yeah, but you need to get rid of that belly and get your blood pressure down and a few other good things. So I think that's what the book's really about.
Well, yeah. And the nice thing about the book, I think it's easy enough that you could even self-assess. I don't know how. I've had a lot of people comment that they just did the 1, 2, 3, 4 assessment to themselves. And I'm like, that's perfect. I mean, I don't think you need to be Dan John certified to do this thing. I think just go and try it. It's pretty simple, you know. It takes about maybe 6 minutes. Maybe the first time might take longer, but at most it takes 5 or 6 minutes to do it all. And the nice thing is you can just say at the end of the 6 minutes, hey, I'm a two. Hey, I'm a three. I'm a five. I was shocked, but I'm a five, you know. And you just look at what a five needs to do, and you focus on that for a couple of weeks. You could reassess. You could do some of the assessments or none of them or whatever and come back and say, my gosh, I've actually made progress. One small thing I recommend, especially to men, is use a centimeter ruler when you measure waistline. And what's nice is you go from 41 to 40 and 3/4 inches. That's not very impressive. But if you go from 108 centimeters to 100 to 99, that's awesome. Or you go from 99 to 94, that's huge numbers. So that's one small thing. After the initial assessment, use the centimeter side to keep track of things.
Little mind games like that, it's a better payoff. It's a psychologically much better payoff.
And it's just not that big a deal, but you do feel better. It's like, oh yeah, I like this, yeah.
It's kind of like using the 45s as on the bar when you're doing a military press as opposed to a bunch of fives and tens. Like, okay, I got the big plates on the bar. It's all little head games.
It's all. I remember when Dick Notmeyer was the head referee at one of my meets as a kid. And as I stepped forward in the cleaner, he looked at me and he went and he gave me the number three with his fingers. And I looked and there were three big plates on both sides. And I got to tell you, even though it didn't make the weight lighter, it made the weight easier because what he was trying to say is you're kind of a big boy now.
Yep. There's that simple but easy thing.
Right. Yeah.
Simple, not easy, or easy, not simple thing just seems to come back constantly through everything that you talk about. And it's so true.
Well, if it wasn't true, I wouldn't beat it to death. Yeah.
Okay. Let's just briefly talk about the workshop. You're doing these workshops with the people from Strength Matters, James Breese, and I know you're doing one in London. I think he said one in Australia and a couple here in the U.S.
San Diego and Washington, D.C., yeah. And working on one in Chicago, too, yeah.
Al, I'm willing to bet there's going to be huge response because, you know, people go to Perform Better to listen to you, go to other things to listen to you for an hour here, an hour there, and this is 3 full days of nothing but you.
Right. And, you know, we have, what's nice, I mean, I also have, like every day we're going to show, there's some fundamental movements I want to teach him. And then we'll do these basic workouts based on those movements. And I'm going to try to show how even, I'm just going to try to show how you build programming from simple things. That's something that gets missed by a lot of people. They get a little bit too complex. They try too many toys, not just toys, but like, for example, there's an exercise called the kettlebell snatch, whereas you can do all these other things like swings and stop and pops and all this other stuff that'll give you just as much punch in the mouth as the kettlebell snatch. But the teaching is within seconds versus, say, maybe days, if you will. So yeah, that's going to be a fun part. A lot of short, a small group work. There is a test. It's take home, and then we review it the next day. But the test is based on the idea of, you know, mining the work we've been doing. The textbook is Can You Go, which is kind of fun. I've never done anything like this in my life, so it's kind of that have a book that was, I don't know. The book is based on workshops, based on workshops, based on workshops. And now people want that workshop, and now we have a book to supplement the workshop. It's kind of an odd thing to say, but that's exactly where this whole thing came.
It kind of seems to be going in a circle there. It seems to.
Yeah.
Okay, so there is a test, so this is an actual certification workshop.
Yeah, I guess the, you know, I'm the only person who's against making a cert, but it's going to be a cert, and God bless them for it.
We all want to be Dan John certified, okay?
Well, certifiable is more correct. But, you know, it's the idea that maybe to show that you went 3 days, you got tested, you know, we expected certain things, at least, and then get exposed. That's the other thing I'm trying to get people to do. Get exposed, think a little bit. The small group work, you know, a couple of my friends have really unpacked their business model. There's a guy named, his website is bikejames.com, and James sent me how he's taken my workshop and applied it to his business and his gym setting. Taylor Lewis out in California did the same thing. Taylor's an interesting guy. He works with two of the most famous Major League Baseball players of all time. If I said their names, you would know both. But he also works with cystic fibrosis patients. And what I think Taylor's great insight into our industry now is if it works for cystic fibrosis and elite baseball players, it's going to work for the rest of us. And I find that to be just a beautiful insight. Very much like the fact, like, I study polio victims and elite athletes because those I think we can get a lot of gems from, if you follow. If I can get somebody wasted away by this terrible disease, and we can build them back up, well, if you're a 14-year-old boy, this ought to work for you too, you know, our 24-year-old boy.
Okay, well, I think we've covered the book, all the reasons why everybody out there should pick up a copy of it. Incidentally, it's available on, got to get the plug in here because they're actually our sponsor. You can pick up a copy of Dan's book, Can You Go, at audible.com. Go to audiblepodcast.com/Saratalk, sign up for the free 1 month trial, and you can pick up a copy of Dan's new book, Can You Go, in the, version where he's reading it, and you get to hear that nice melodic voice for several hours. You can also pick up his book that he co-authored with Josh Hillis that we mentioned earlier, Fat Loss Happens on Monday. That's also available at audiblepodcast.com/Saratalk. And I think we've been on here for just about an hour, so we've covered the workshop, we've talked about the book. Dan, is there anything you'd like to say in closing?
Oh, no, you know, I really appreciate our talks. It's you're always very kind, and it's nice. This time the dog was only a minor hindrance, and I enjoy our conversations. The other thing I really got to appreciate, Bill, is that you read the book, and you know it. I often have to do podcasts with people who clearly, this sounds awful. It's not always true, but very often I have to do them with people who just simply don't know my work. And I really appreciate you for being such a good student of it. And not that there's anything fancy or, you know, there's nothing special. I'm not special or anything, but it's nice not to have to, you know, go back to in the beginning with somebody, you know. It was nice to be able to just flow and converse.
Well, it was a very easy read. It's not my favorite Dan John writing. My favorite still is Never Let Go, which I don't think is available in Audible, is it?
People keep asking me to do it. It's so hard for me to do Audible. It's so
okay.
Hard. I have a guy I go to church with has a great voice, and I've asked him about reading it. And then I mentioned to other people, what if he did? And they're like, no, we want to hear you. It's like, really? Get a life, man. Get a life. But maybe I can.
No, you've got this kind of, and don't take this wrong, but you've got this kind of grandfather meeting, reading me a story by the fire thing in your voice.
That's funny. I say, I think you've got a guy with a speech impediment with a South City Irish brogue and a accent all rolled into one. That's what I think. You know, but okay, I appreciate that.
Okay. All right. Well, we've covered the book, and like I said, I'm putting the plug in there for my personal favorite, Never Let Go. And I guess that pretty well wraps it up. And this has been Bill, and you've been listening to The Coach's Coach, Dan John, here on Real World Fitness. Appreciate you taking the time to listen. Next week, my guests will be Brooks Kubik and Clarence Bass. And knowing those two, it may turn into a two-part show. And everybody have a fantastic week. See you soon. Real World Fitness is a production of the Serotalk Podcast Network in cooperation with KosiabaFitness.com. All questions, comments, and feedback should be submitted to resources at Serotalk.com. If you're listening on a mobile device, use your iBlink radio app to submit an iReport. Promotional consideration paid for by Audible.com.